Welcome to The Out Agenda, coming to you on archive.kpfk.org. I'm Rita Gonzalez.
And I'm Ralph Radabaugh. Today on the show, we're going to speak with actor, writer, Mitch Hara about his new one-man show, Mutant Olive 2.0, which is actually a redo of Mutant Olive. He's updated it in a lot of ways, is what I understand. So he's going to come on and talk about his one-man show, which I'm really excited to hear about.
Oh, it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun. But before we introduce our guest, I do want to say some good news.
Good news, Rita. Really?
Yes. Chuck Schumer.
He's the head of the Senate.
Right. Well, he announced that his daughter, Allison Schumer, has welcomed a baby with her wife, Elizabeth Wellen. So he is a granddaddy. He's already been a granddaddy. Just wishing his daughter and her wife well.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's really nice to hear, Rita. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff that doesn't necessarily make the, big news, the CNN. And, you know, so
right.
It's really nice to kind of put that out there because, yes, that's significant, really significant.
Yeah. So if for those who don't know who he is, he's the Senate Majority Leader, Democrat from New York. I should add that if people didn't know who he was. So
good
now
news.
That we did that, I think we should introduce our guests. What do you think?
Let's do it.
Okay.
Mitch, welcome to The Out Agenda. It's a pleasure to have you here and quite an honor, I might add.
Oh, thanks, Ralphie. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well, thank you. Rita, how are you doing?
I'm fabulous. After that terrible winds we've been having, I didn't blow away, so that was a good thing. So I'm still doing
good. What is this bipolar California weather?
It's crazy.
I didn't move here for that.
Where are you from originally?
Oh, I was born in Chicago, ran away from home, grew up in New York, and then I migrated here. You know, no one will support me here, but when I first moved here a few years ago, I have a 2-year memory, it's probably been 20. It was summer all year round. No one will support me here, but we never had this kind of crazy ass weather.
Well, no, we never had. I'm born
right?
and raised in LA, so I'm second generation.
Oh my God, you're the third person.
Yeah, well, we someone had to be here to greet everybody else.
That's right, Rita.
But our weather was fashion. That was our weather. That's how you could tell weather was our fashions. That was the only way. Yeah.
Mitch, you know what? I just wanted to, as I was reading your bio, I just think the opening line of your bio, if you don't mind if I read it here on the show, was interesting. I'm sure that it influenced just about everything that you've done and what we're going to talk about today. And so it starts out with, Mitch Hara was raised by speed freak alcoholics, which shaped his unique voice and eccentric view of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us how it impacted your life and how it got you to this point.
Oh my God. Well, you know, it influenced everything. I mean, because you wake up, you know, you're brought up in this altered state that you think everybody is living in that experience. Do you know what I mean? So, my house was so volatile and my parents were like nuts and energetic and crazy. And Monday they'd be fat and Friday they'd be skinny and they'd be throwing ashtrays around and we'd be flying through the air. And my father was volatile and screaming and punching walls. And I just thought everybody lived that way. So, I mean, my skew of the world is always a black comedy, no matter how horrible the event is or how painful. I always see the humor underneath, you know, I mean, because my show is like I love doing it. I just love it because me and the audience co-create. So it's like everybody brings their own unique experience to the table. I mean, mine's extreme, so they feel more comfortable, but it's like,
Now we're talking about Mutant Olive 2.0.
Yes.
Right?
Mutant
yes.
Olive 2.0, baby, at the Hudson Theater. And if you want tickets, on stage, 411.com/mutant. I told you I was going to do that.
Okay.
And that's that's what we're here for.
Yeah, I cut you off from what you were saying, and you were saying how the audience actually comes into the performance.
Oh my God. Well, it all takes place during an audition. So I really use the audience when I come in and my father's torturing me. It's like this twisted love letter to my father. And, you know, I mean, I found their speed when I was like a fat kid in sophomore in high school. So when I thought they were vitamins, you know? And so I popped one of those suckers, you know, sophomore year in high school and ran off to school. And, you know, second period, my eyes flew open and I saw God. And I lost like 30 pounds in a month.
Wow.
Were those black beauties at the time?
Oh, yeah, baby. Yeah. And Spansels, 15 milligram time release, Dexedrine. So, I mean, they were like, and my parents were both taking them. And my mother was banging everybody in the neighborhood. So it's like I watched all this, for me, normal, but for everybody else, like this dysfunctional crazy. So it's like I, you know, when I look at families and when I look at, you know, children, and when I look at all that, it just doesn't look appealing to me still, you know. And I know I don't have to create, you know, that, but I could create my own definition of family, but it's like, why?
So you never wanted to pass your experience on to children is what you're saying?
No, it'd be horrible.
Well, it would be an interesting life. So I guess you didn't grow up watching Father Knows Best.
Oh my God. That's hysterical. I used to watch those stupid sitcoms and go, these are the stupidest thing I ever got, because it wasn't real. You know, everybody was nice and they were sitting down. I mean, my mother never cooked. My mother never cleaned. If she had to use a vacuum, she'd torture us for a week. My father would be like, never eat, because he was speeding his brains out. So it's like he would come home and be all twisted out and start punching the walls. We had punch holes everywhere in our house. And my mother would scurry behind him, hanging little pictures over the punch holes.
Wow.
So the whole house looked like some acid trip art installation by Andy Warhol. And I thought that was normal. So it's like, you know, this is where I'm coming from.
I think that people, you know, hesitate, that haven't experienced that, because I came from, my father was abusive growing up, and people say, oh, that must have been awful. And you thought, well, it just seemed normal. It just seemed normal.
Right.
You know, so you don't really think about how awful it is until you get older and someone says, oh, that must have been awful.
100%.
Yeah.
Well, and people say how brave I am and how whatever, you know, doing this show. And I don't view it that it's brave. It's just, it's the... I dramatize, and I created this, I sculpted this show out of my experience.
Well, it gave you material for your show, I guess.
Shit.
Yeah,
I mean, and I thank them all for it. I mean, without them, I could be a bank teller.
Well,
a very interesting bank teller, but a bank teller.
Very colorful bank teller.
Do you have siblings?
I do have a younger brother and a younger sister, and they did not escape. My brother looks like 20 years older than I am and thinks that he's my father. And my sister was fabulous. I brought her up. So she's very free and very insane.
Oh, okay. So you had something to bounce things off, or?
A little bit, yeah. You know. My father was very verbally abusive, but besides, you know, beating and punching and but it was like I represented everything he didn't understand.
Yes.
You know, I mean, he's 6'4", blonde hair and blue eyes, and I was not what he was looking for. And I'm the first child. So I came popping out like a 5-foot gypsy, you know, with blue eyes and jet black hair, and I look like everything he didn't want. And I was very artistic, you know, quote unquote.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So, I mean, you know, I was singing, I was tap dancing, you know, and he was just appalled. Because, you know, parents feel like you are a representation of them. So if mm-hmm. it's not a picture that they accept or they want, then they cannot stand you. So it's like, I get it, you know, and the only way he knew how is like verbally abusive. And I was fat, so that wasn't cute either.
Are they still alive?
No, they're dead.
Oh, so have they seen
anything? I did make up, and I have no regrets. I worked out those relationships with both those people before they died.
Okay. Have they seen any of your shows?
They saw some of my shows. This show, Doris Roberts from Everyone Loves Raymond, she was one of my best friends. She played the mother. Anyway, mm-hmm. she was like, I said, do you think my parents should see? And she said, no, honey, they don't need to see this shit. And it's like, my father would have understood how badly I portray him. But the way I portray my mom, who was just a party whore, you know, I mean, she banged everybody in the neighborhood. That was his true love, and he put her on a pad. Oh, no, it's true. She did. She can't hear. She knows. And but he loved her so much, and he put her on a pedestal, so I wanted to keep her up there for him. You know what I mean? So he didn't have to see that. You know, he did. They did come to one show that I did that was very autobiographical, but I had like four different people on there telling their own stories, and we had rock music. So my parents came to that, and my mother cried through the whole thing. And my father, the only thing he could deal with was, you know, where you were crying, you're doing that Strasbourg shit. That was good. The rest of it sucked. You know what I mean? And my mother came up to me with tears in her eyes and said, I'm sorry, your childhood was so awful.
Oh,
I know. And I was like, oh, girl, get out. Yes, yep. We're done.
But Mitch, don't you really find that, okay, you have two to three choices in life. You know, when you come from a tragic background, you mm-hmm. can either be a victim of that and live a very tragic life yourself, or you can use it as a jumping board for which to kind of triumph and move beyond it. And so isn't there a part of you that kind of feels like, thanks, Mom and Dad. You know, it wasn't like what I would have chosen at the time, but as I look back and what it made me and a lot stronger.
100%. Every word of that is true. I would not have my sense of humor. I would not have my survivor, you know, fight. I mean, I'm fearless. And it's Ooh. Really because of them.
Yeah.
I am the best and worst parts of both of them.
Yeah.
I really am. And I thank them every day. I mean, I thank them before, you know, we really bonded and we really, I had this one crazy conversation when I was 19 with my mother, and it was in Chicago in this red Italian restaurant. And I'll save you the details, but she goes, I'm worried about you, honey. And I was like, what now? And so she was like, I know that you're sleeping with men. To anyone who'll open the door in New York City. And I was just like, well, I know that you're having sex with anybody in the neighborhood who'll open the door. So she said, do you hate me for that? And I was like, no. You know, I just knew you weren't getting what you needed in the house. So I was happy you were getting it from somewhere. You know, and then it got really touching. And I said, you know, she said, I just have a big hole in my heart that I can't, you know, fill. And I said, well, I wish, you know, I was part of the thing that could fill your heart. And she said, you are my heart, honey.
Oh, Mitch, what a beautiful isn't that like amazing mother. Story?
So all of this is, are you playing this in the show that you're doing now? I know, let's talk about the show.
Okay. Oh, yeah, for sure. Of course.
That's
a lot
about.
Of this is in the show. That story in the restaurant is not in the show. That was just a freebie that I only tell to very few people, and now I'm telling it.
And now we're going
to
tell everybody.
It's mostly with your dad, isn't it?
It's a lot of my dad, and then it's the relationship they had that kind of colored my path in this thing. I mean, it starts out, it's really toxic and it's really horrible, and I'm like, you know, I'm fighting him, and it goes through, I come in on the phone with him and he's berating me again. Like he, you know, one of his things was, you're not 23 anymore. Of course I'm not 23. I've been 23 since I was 12. Uh-huh. And so, and between the rapping for the Hamilton Unplugged, you know, and I get to play 17 roles because I have 17 personalities, I can utilize them all. And then when I get into, I have to purge my life before I could get to the monologue that I'm supposed to do for the audition. So I do go through a lot of stories, like my father teaching me how to swim when I was two by throwing me over the side of a boat in Lake Michigan without a life preserver. And my mom standing there with the cigarette and the cleavage, because she thought she was, you know, Liz Taylor, going, Ray, don't you think the kid needs a life preserver? And my father, you know, spit over the side of the boat and said, no. Fat floats. So it's like, you know, and then I have to call him on speed dial during the audition and bitch him out and then go back to the audition. So, I mean, it's this roller coaster.
Which I have to say, just because we need to put in that, since we're talking about the audition as being a major part of the play, but it was described in several reviews as a cringeworthy audition.
I know. It's great.
Well, that right there made me want to see it.
Oh my God, it's so great because it's like, it's Hamilton Unplugged. And of course, I wanted a play that is immediately recognizable and a part that I would be absolutely never seen for. So his best friend is black and he's a rapper and I'm auditioning for that. So I tell him, I don't want to start with the text of the show because everybody's going to do that. And then I do a little rapping. I'm going to do a monologue for Midsummer Night's Dream. The Puck character, you know, only I'm going to play him as an Italian pizza delivery person. And so I, you know, so it'll be like spinaccio tu fatti, a faccio tu mamma, and I tip toe into. So it's horrible, but I relish it. And it's fabulous.
Yeah, you're just, are you the only one in the play?
Yeah, no, it's a one man show. It's an hour and a half of me. Okay. What could be better?
No, I think it's
certainly entertaining.
Yeah, you said you're is doing it. I didn't know if anybody else was there. You know how they pipe in voices. Okay.
Oh yeah, no. You know what? I first of all, when I come in, I make somebody in the audience, the director and the producer and the casting person, and I hand out pictures and I go into the audience to convince them to cast me in this. Oh yeah. So it's interactive.
Okay, how fun. So that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, what do they have to come? Do?
Are you in LA? Are you guys in LA?
Yeah.
I'm not, but I do come to LA. I'm in Palm Springs.
Oh, okay. So is my, you know, a lot of people are in Palm Springs. You know, Amanda Beersay?
Yeah,
you know
she's
her?
Here. I don't know her personally. I know she's
Oh, yeah. She's here. She just was in Smothered. It's a series I did on Amazon Prime that I wrote with Jason Stewart.
With Jason Stewart. Yeah, Jason Stewart. I see Jason.
He's there all the time.
I see him with his mother, either at the senior
all the
center.
Time.
Or, oh, yeah. I see him a lot.
Gloria.
He doesn't see me. I just drive by and go,
oh,
oh
yeah. No, he's crazy hysterical.
Oh, I love him. He's been on our show. I love him.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So he's my co-creator in that. So, okay. And it went viral, and now we just finished season two, and she's in it.
Oh, great.
Smothered is a comedy about two middle-aged gay men.
And yeah, kind of who can't stand each other, but can't afford to get divorced.
And don't they go into therapy?
Oh, yeah. The first oh, season is five therapy sessions, and then they rob a bank to get away from each other. It's so good. And they're all 5-minute episodes. You could binge it in like 20 minutes and you'll feel so good about yourself.
Oh, I know what I'm going to do tonight.
Yeah.
And it's so funny. Wait, and the second season is 9 new episodes, 10 minutes a piece. And it's spectacular.
Okay. And that is Smothered. Okay.
Smothered.
Yeah.
That's a whole new thing.
Yeah. We have to promote that also. So, okay. The time is going by like really, really quick right now.
I love
now,
you
so.
Guys. You guys
I
are
know.
So great.
I've got so many other questions, but
ask
we
me,
need
ask
to.
Me, ask me.
Okay. Well, so how long does this play
run?
How does it run?
It starts. I just heard. Did I tell you that it sold out opening night?
No.
No.
I just heard today. It almost made me cry because I work at Sony, and there were some people, some execs came up, and they were just like, "We tried to get a ticket for the 7th, and it sold out," because it's 6 Tuesdays. Starting March 7th. So that's 4 and 2 in April. So 4 weeks ahead of time, my first show is sold out.
And it's only on Tuesday nights.
Only on Tuesdays. I did it 3 nights. You know, it's too much. It's like, it's a lot. It's
an hour and a half.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
And it's very emotional. And I do it every time like I've never done it before. You know, when I get on stage, it's like the first time. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. I won't watch it because they filmed it so many times. I don't want to see a clever thing I did that I think, oh my God, that's so funny. Let me do it again, because then it's not going to be, you know, genuine and it's not going to be organic. And I want me and the audience create this amazing ride together. And you can't get that anywhere else. You can't get that in film. You can't get that on TV, only in stage. And they come with me on this crazy ride. And it starts out so funny. And you hear these crazy screaming laughs. And then all of a sudden, uh-oh, they start to cry. Yeah, boom, it goes dark. And then it goes happy. And then it goes dark. And then it just, you know, and it's 90%. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, things that I took license, or it's the way I think I saw them. And but it's an experience that I can't do without the audience.
Mm.
and they feed me. You know what I mean?
Theater. Yeah,
absolutely.
The audience.
I love theater so much. Yeah. I can't stand it.
I love it too. It's just
there's nothing like
so
it.
Magical.
It's just something about that. And sometimes you'll just zero in on that one person, and it's just like, you know, you're just telling them your soul.
Right.
And they respond back.
The whole thing is breaking the fourth wall. I talk directly to them because I'm in a rehab and I talk to the group and it's me by myself with chairs and the audience. So, and we have like a talking stick and it magically appears and you reveal. And, you know, the queer quotient or the gay quotient, it's like, it's ingrained in our grow up, you know? I mean, it's in the bones. It doesn't define. I mean, for me, I'm an artist first in my, you know, for me, and then I happen to be a man. And then everything else is that, you know, informs me, my taste, my thing, my sex, you know, the sex. So, I mean, it's just like, I'm not on a float, but it's prominent. Do you know what I mean? I mean, he called me horrible names. It's in there. Do you know what I mean? My teacher called me horrible names. It's in there. I mean, I had an art class. This is in there. And it's a second grade art class. And you were just supposed to draw just what you saw. And it was just fruit on a table. So everybody drew a little fruit on a table. It was second grade. And I drew a fruit funeral because I saw the apple in a banana coffin with great mourners. And my teacher lost her mind and called both my parents in and said, look at this. This is unacceptable. He is unacceptable. And, you know, my father was just embarrassed. And he said, of course it's unacceptable. And like beat me up. And it's like, and ripped up my damn picture. And my mother, you know, in real life, she said, well, it's a lot more creative than that other shit you have hanging on that wall. But instead, I do it in the play.
Okay. It's on Tuesdays and starts
March 7th for 6 Tuesdays. So it's the 7th, the 14th, the 21st, 28th, and then April 4th and 11th at the Hudson Theater in Hollywood. And if you want to Google, it's onstage411.com/MUTANT because it's called Mutant Olive. And I'm the olive.
Okay.
And it's a great moment in the script where I finally rebel against the father.
And we should encourage people that the tickets are being sold out. So if they want tickets, they should.
Get on it. Because, opening night is sold out and I'm so excited. And I just love doing it. I'm so excited. This was amazing. Rita, you're fab. Ralphie, come to see my show.
I'm going to come see it. I'm here in Los Angeles.
Well, Ralphie comes to too. In fact, I'm going to LA tomorrow, so I do go to LA. So, yeah.
Oh, okay, totally. So you must come.
It's
the best thing I ever do.
I have to see this. Yes.
Oh, it's fun. Fun.
Okay.
Lord help.
Mitch, thank you very, very much.
You are awesome.
It's my pleasure.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Much fun talking to you. You're just awesome.
I know. This was like 5 minutes.
It did. And it's like, oh, wow. Yeah. So, got to see the play.
Oh, 100%. Mutant Olive, baby. 2.0. That's right. 2.0. It's a new ride.
Yes.
Mutant Olive 2.0.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Mitch. Once again, we are speaking with actor-writer Mitch Hara about his one-man show, Mutant Olive 2.0. And we'd like to hear from you, and we'd like to know what kinds of stories and interviews you'd like to hear.
Like us on our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, or email us at theadagenda@gmail.com. And I'm Rita Gonzalez.
And I'm Ralph Radabaugh. Thanks for listening, and have a wonderful week.
And remember that being out is the first step to being equal. Now stay tuned for This Way Out.